brought to you by CGTN Europe.
I'm Stephen Cole. Welcome to the Agenda podcast. Today on the podcast, we look at how the COVID-19 crisis has impacted the poorest around the world and what those in power can do to address the situation. Economic growth, diversification, and sustainable development have all contributed to a fall in the number of people living in poverty over the last 20 years. That progress could be wiped out in a matter of months, as the International Monetary Fund predicts a 4.9% reduction in the global economy following the COVID-19 crisis. To find out more, I spoke to Oxford University's Dr. Juan Palomino, who explains why those in poorer paid jobs will struggle most due to COVID-19. Juan, the economic effects of COVID-19 is going to affect all of us in some way or another, but inevitably the poorest in society are going to be worst affected, aren't they?
We've seen that in terms of health. Well, there's some studies that show that in the most deprived regions, even in developed countries, is where the pandemic is having a greater effect in terms of cases and deaths. But of course, that's also going to happen in economic terms. We know that there's a huge impact in terms of overall unemployment and decrease in GDP. But based on the different ability that people have to work under these conditions, the lockdown and social distance, that's going to affect in an asymmetric way at the labor force and therefore have an impact in inequality and in poverty.
So what occupations do you think are going to be worst affected or hardest hit?
Well, we find that those occupations that cannot, I mean, of course, essential occupations are not going to be affected in terms of income. These people have to be in the front line. They have another risk, but they can keep their jobs. And on the other hand, we have the occupations that can work from home, managers, more like qualified occupations. But those occupations that have face-to-face work, such as those that work in hospitality and sectors like waiting and tourism, those occupations are going to be more affected in terms of unemployment and therefore in terms of potential wage loss. And as it happens that those occupations tend to be in the lower part of the wage distribution, that's going to cause inequality to increase even in developed countries. And in some cases, some of these workers may even go beyond the poverty line, and that's going to increase poverty as well.
So does that mean certain countries with certain types of economy are going to suffer the worst?
That's what we are studying in our work. We want to provide a short-term diagnose of what is the potential impact that different countries in Europe are going to have. And we do find that countries in Southern Europe and in Eastern Europe, which have a lower share of occupations that can be done from home, are going to have a higher potential impact in terms of inequality and poverty.
Which countries in particular? You mentioned Southern Europe and Eastern Europe, but which countries are you looking at?
First of all, I want to say that all countries are going to be affected, even in countries that are going to be the least affected, such as probably in our estimates, Norway, well, the UK, the Netherlands, France, or Switzerland. Those are going to be less affected, but there's still going to be a significant increase in within inequality and poverty. And on the other hand, we find that countries such as Croatia, Portugal, Cyprus, and most of those in Eastern and Southern Europe are going to have a higher increase in inequality and poverty. We hope that governments take measure to prevent this from happening to some extent. What all the estimates that we have are the potential impact that the labor market differences can have on poverty and inequality. We are seeing that governments are being quite proactive. Unlike the previous Great Recession, now there is a consensus on trying to tackle this potential increase in poverty. But we don't know if these measures are going to be big enough to fully compensate for that. And the lockdown and the distance measures that are in place will probably be longer than the length of these job retention measures that we have. So our work in a way really encourages governments to keep doing what they're doing, because otherwise we might see the divide between rich and poor in Europe increase after this crisis.
And if it increases, does that mean visually we see more people sleeping on the streets, we see more food banks, more soup kitchens? Is that how it works out?
Well, we are already seeing that. It all depends on whether this is just a short-term crisis that can be counterbalanced next year. But unfortunately, it seems that the cases are not disappearing, and social distance measures will be in place, and therefore the job loss will continue. So these things may unfortunately happen, and they're already happening, right?
Dr. Juan Palomino from the University of Oxford, thank you for joining us on The Agenda. As poverty around the world rises post-pandemic, the world's children will be among the worst affected. Some estimate 30 million more children in Africa alone will be forced into poverty this year because of the virus. Well, joining me now to consider what we can do to prevent that is David Stewart. David is Chief of Child Poverty and Social Protection at the UN Children's Fund, UNICEF. David, the numbers of the very poor had been falling quite steadily, but it's now rising quite fast. How much of that increase is down to COVID-19?
It is almost entirely down to COVID-19. As you say, poverty rates were falling, child poverty rates were falling, but the impact on families and then the longer term impacts on economies are really reversing the progress that we've seen. And as you say, children are going to be the worst affected. Children are twice as likely to live in poverty as adults, and so will be twice as affected as a result of the economic impacts of the crisis. And our estimates overall, and they change as the numbers change, are that over 100 million additional children are likely to be in poverty by the end of the year.
Those are very big numbers, David. What can UNICEF do to help address that?
First is to provide protection and information to families to protect people from the pandemic. Also, we have to start preparing and increasing and improving services and working with governments to do that, both in the response and in the longer term recovery. And one area which is particularly crucial when it comes to child poverty is strengthening social protection systems and cash transfer programs. I mean, this is an area where we know the problem is very significant, but we also know a lot about what to do about it. And we know that these programs can make a huge difference by providing financial protection to children and families and having impacts on their health, their education, their nutrition. So we're working with governments across the world to improve those social protection programs and increase coverage for children.
How do they work in practice, though, David? I gauge what you're talking about is the number or the amount of remittances being sent home is worsening and lowering because people can't go to work. And if they can't work, they can't send the money back to their families.
Yeah, that's right. Well, the impacts are multifaceted. One side of it is going to be on remittances and sending money home. The other is the lockdowns that are happening across the world prevent people from working, and not everybody has protection. And then we're going to see the following economic consequences of these lockdowns. So we're expecting a recession like hasn't been seen even in the financial crisis of 2008 to unfold. So all of these factors have a real big impact on poverty and child poverty. And so social protection programs, particularly cash transfer programs, what they do is they provide replacement of income for children and families. And the response overall has been impressive. There are over 190 countries that have provided some form of social protection response to provide that financial protection. And I think there are two areas of concern we have to look at when we go into the longer term. One is the scale of the response. You know, overall, 2 out of 3 children in the world have no access to a child or family benefit. So there are still a lot of children that are not covered. And the second is the longevity. So countries are increasing their programs right now, but many of them are slated to tail off in the coming months. Whereas we know this recovery is going to be long coming. It's going to take a long time to get economies back up and running. And we also know that other shocks are going to come, climate shocks among others. So really expanding these programs for the long term is essential for children.
It's estimated, one number I saw, is about 900 million children around the world can't read or write. What is the link between education and poverty?
Education and poverty move closely together. I mean, when you look at educational access and educational outcomes, you see that it's children in poorer families who have less access to education, less access to quality education, and more pressures, which make it difficult to continue with education and complete. So they really go hand in hand. And the response requires both pieces. So the social protection side can support families who are financially constrained and address child poverty, but without access to quality education, it becomes, the additional resources can't be used in a way to really improve educational outcomes. So it's really a twin track where you have to really improve services at the same time, financial security of families.
And that's going to be doubly difficult at the moment as people are looking at their aid programs and perhaps cutting back in aid programs, not least thinking about education, but also in vaccination programs.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the challenge with vaccination is as we've focused in on this one vital health concern, we have seen risks to vaccination programs continuing. In 68 countries, some recent research showed there are real strains in terms of vaccination programming. And maybe, I think it was 90 million children are not going to be able to be vaccinated as was would be the normal routine plan. And that can see real risks of increases of polio, diphtheria, measles. So that's a real serious concern. And your point on the aid budget is also vital. I mean, as you say, countries have committed to 0.7% of their GDP to commit that to aid. But as GDPs shrink as a result of the crisis, and at the same time countries face increasing challenges at home, we do face the risk that aid budgets are going to fall. And for the world's poorest children, that would just be catastrophic. So the need to prioritize and maintain and seek indeed to increase that commitment over time is absolutely vital.
In spite of the gloomy predictions, there is one country which insists its plans to eradicate rural poverty by the end of this year remain on track, China. Joining me from Beijing to discuss the poverty plan is Li Yong, deputy chair of the expert committee at the China Association of International Trade. Li Yong, China's been planning for years to eliminate rural poverty by the end of this year, and President Xi has said, in spite of COVID-19, they're still on track with that plan. How so?
One of the measures is to bring them to areas, for example, where the job opportunities available, which we call a cross-province employment. And this has been a main means by which the government is trying to bring those poverty-stricken households out of poverty. So those people living in those areas can go to other areas, like the more developed areas, to get employed,
Find a job. Okay, so they're encouraging, if I can summarize on that point, they're encouraging greater mobility to richer areas to perhaps try and enrich more the poorer areas.
Exactly, so that they can have an income from the job. And then, that it will improve the well-being of the household as a whole.
Right. And what kind of challenges, how would you describe the major challenges to alleviating poverty in China?
Yeah, in the beginning, I think the change of the mindset. Because, the poverty-stricken areas used to receive government aid. And those, counties who wore the poverty hat felt reluctant to give up the head, because, you know, once they give up the head, you know, they won't be able to receive any government aid. So that needs to be corrected. Today, I think, you know, the challenge is, for example, how to deal with the impact of COVID-19, as well as, I think that this is very important, as well as, you know, the measures taken to prevent those people lifted out of poverty from falling back
into poverty. On a sort of more international scale, do you think that greater interaction between economies, rich and poor economies, is the way to help alleviate or reduce global poverty?
And from China's experience and the practices, and this is definitely is going to be an effective way of alleviating poverty, because, you know, this richer area has more resources and they are more industrialized. And more importantly, they also have the kind of demand that will support the production and sales of the products being produced in the poverty-stricken area.
Poverty is not just about income, is it? It's also about education. Is that part of the national plan to improve education?
Yes, definitely. President Xi Jinping once said, you know, the first and most important thing to alleviate poverty is to improve the level of education. So education is the fundamental solution, actually, to, you know, removing or to eliminating poverty. And according to international experiences, the more education you have, the less likely you fall into poverty. The other way, you know, to put it on the other way around, the more education you have, and the more likely you are, you are likely to get richer.
That brings us to the end of another edition of The Agenda. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. You can also find us on CGTN Europe, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube.
The most interesting questions.
Are there other living beings beyond Earth?
Will man or machine be in charge?
Great question.
Always have more than one answer.
Well, hold on, let me just draw up a list.
And always come from more than one person.
That's where the credibility lies.
The concept of having a machinery which is alive and evolving didn't wait for us.
The end of inequality of incomes and wealth around the world, can you imagine how difficult that is at the moment to achieve?
Every episode, Stephen Cole, Murray Beveridge, and some of the brightest minds out there shed light on the answers to some of the most intriguing questions.
There are two ways of looking at this.
Machines can't really discriminate between civilian and military targets.
The Answers Project.
Maybe we need to just look at this in a bit more detail.
Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence.
The Answers Project, a new podcast from CGTN Europe.